The Chinese embassy in Australia has criticised the federal government's decision to follow the US and participate in a diplomatic boycott of the Beijing Winter Olympics, saying it runs counter to Australia's wish to improve relations. Prime Minister Scott Morrison made the announcement this morning, citing the breakdown of Australia-China relations and Beijing's human rights record. He says any retaliation would be utterly unacceptable.
Well, I think that would be completely and utterly unacceptable, and there'd be no grounds for that whatsoever. I'll always stand up for Australia's interests and what Australians believe is right. And we are living in an uncertain time. The world in our part of the Indo-Pacific is uncertain, and that requires leaders to be strong and stand up for Australia.
The Queensland State Government, which was invited to send a contingent ahead of holding the 2032 Summer Olympics, will join the federal government in not having a presence in Beijing. Richard Miles is a Deputy Opposition Leader and Shadow Employment Minister. He joined me earlier and I started by asking for his view of China's response.
Look, I think the government's made the right decision here to engage in a diplomatic boycott of the Games in support of the US position. I think that's the right thing to do given the human rights situation in China, and so, you know, we support the government in this role, in this position. I mean, I think it's also right that the athletes who have been preparing for the game should be able to go and compete on our behalf.
Do you expect China to retaliate further, for instance, with tariffs?
I don't know, but I mean, at the end of the day, I think it's important that we're exercising our voice in the international domain.
Okay, so we just have to wear that if that is the consequence.
Well, it's critically important that as a country we do exercise our voice on behalf of human rights internationally. It's obviously important that we exercise our voice in our own national interest as well. So that absolutely comes first, and we manage events from there.
As a US ally, this decision comes pretty much straight away after the US has made the similar decision. Does it look like we're just sort of following? Does foreign policy look like it's just following the US?
The US have obviously made their decision. I think it's reasonable to act in this way in this circumstance. I mean, we do need to make our own decision. I think that's what's occurred here. I don't think it's unreasonable that we're making this decision in the wake of the decision the US has made.
Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg says the government is consulting with industry about establishing a licensing arrangement for digital currency exchange. What's Labor's position on more regulation for that industry?
This is a new area. It's really important that the government keeps up to speed with where we're at with issues like cryptocurrency. It's really important that we're engaging, that there is regulation which protects consumers, that eases the pressure on small business, that promotes innovation. Really, at the end of the day, all the government's promising to do here is to have a chat with people, which is really what they've done in the past. There's no promise of any action on the part of the government before the next election. So other than marking the spot, it's not really obvious what the government's doing here. But look, you know, we think it's really, this is an important area in which to engage in dialogue, and we'll be certainly interested in what the Reserve Bank has to say on this question.
Do you agree, though, that services such as Google and Apple Pay should be subject to more oversight?
Well, it's important that there is proper regulation here, which makes sure that there is protection for consumers. That is really important. And it's important that this can happen in a way which eases the burden on small business. So we get the need for action here.
The federal government has promised to shoulder the university debts of doctors and nurse practitioners who work in regional, remote and rural areas from January next year. How far will this go in addressing skill shortages?
Well, we do have a skills crisis in Australia. It's important that we are looking at that. We've obviously made our own announcements in the last few days in relation to that, both in terms of TAFE and university. But it is fundamentally the cuts that this government has engaged in both TAFE and university over the last 8 years, which have left us in the position that we're currently in. And whilst it's true that, you know, during the pandemic, with the experience of the international border being closed, that certainly put a spotlight on this. The lesson that we must learn coming out of the pandemic is that we need to be training people in this country. But what you know with Labor is that we are completely committed to repairing the situation that the country finds itself in, where in respect of trades, for example, we've got 85,000 less trades and apprenticeships and trainees than we had in 2013.
I want to talk about the criticism of George Christensen, which has been really across the political spectrum. There's been criticism. The Prime Minister has voiced his criticism of George Christensen's appearance on this right-wing conspiracy show. But at the same time, he took aim at the media reporting of the comments. What do you make of that?
Well, I think really the story here is a failure of leadership on the part of Scott Morrison. I mean, George Christensen is a repeat offender in respect of this. And he's a repeat offender because the Prime Minister doesn't pull him into line. I mean, what George Christensen has done here causes enormous offence, particularly within the Jewish community, but more broadly throughout the country. As I say, he is a repeat offender. Scott Morrison's leadership here is the question, and it's the failure of it which is put into stark relief by what we've seen George Christensen do. And I don't think there's a question of the media coverage.
Okay, it's an interesting one, the idea, though, of media coverage on these sorts of things, whether there's sort of platforming or giving too much attention to those issues. Do you think that is an issue?
Well, I think it is important that that there's the right balance here. I actually think the media is doing the right thing in highlighting it. I mean, the issue that we've got now is you've got so many differing ways in which this information can get out that I don't think we can ignore what George Christensen has done. It's important, I think, to call it out. But the most important voice in this should be the Prime Minister's. It's actually important that Scott Morrison calls George Christensen out, and in a way which takes some responsibility for the fact that he is a member of Scott Morrison's government. I mean, Scott Morrison governs because George Christensen's vote is there on his side.
I want to take you to the broader movement we're seeing against vaccine mandates, COVID-19 policies. And if you look at sort of the numbers of people demonstrating consistently on the streets, particularly in Melbourne, it looks like a sort of pretty strong movement of disgruntled people. How does Labor engage with those people? They're very upset about vaccine mandates. Do you have any sympathy for that view?
Well, I think people have a right to express their view in a free society. We obviously acknowledge that. I do think it's important that within politics we engage with views. Having said that, at least some of the demonstrations have occurred in a way which certainly causes me anxiety. The exercising of free speech needs to be done in a way which is peaceful and which is civil. And obviously, when you're walking down Spring Street with gallows, that doesn't meet that criteria, and there is absolutely no place for that, and that kind of protest should be called out. Vaccines is what gets us to the other side of the pandemic. Mm. Vaccines are the pathway to getting back to
normality. So we know that based on the science, but then there's the right.
These are difficult questions where balances come into play. You know, we all have a right to be as safe as we possibly can in the context of the virus. And one of the things that the virus does is it connects us all. The virus is spread from one human to another. And so inevitably there is a balancing of rights here. But where I get to in my head with all of that is given the complexity of that, it's really important that government leads. Now, to be honest, I think the federal government should have done more leadership here. But in the absence of that, state governments around the country have provided leadership.
So that's when what's you say occurred. The federal government should have done more, what should have they done?
Oh, well, I think from the beginning of the pandemic, we've seen a federal government who has written its role very small.
But on vaccines, which it was responsible for the rollout, should it have been more pursuing mandates more?
Well, the point that we've made in relation to the federal government is that when you think about vaccine policy in the workplace, if I can put it in those terms. The industrial relations, the workplace, is in large measure a federal responsibility. The federal government has essentially said that they don't, they've not sought to go into that space. I think that has been a failure of leadership.
Do you think it'll swing votes in some very tight marginal seats?
There's a long way to go between now and the election, but at the end of the day, what matters here is getting the question right. I mean, we can't be analysing the question of vaccine mandates or vaccine policy in respect of votes. We actually need to be analysing it. Well, we need to be analysing it in terms of how we get the country to the other side of the pandemic, how we keep people safe, but how we get back to a place of normality. And the right of, in this case, the Victorian government or any state government to put in place a public health order in respect of vaccine mandates is really important, and I support what they've done.
Does Labor want the election to be about the government's management of the pandemic?
Inevitably, you know, how the government has performed over the last 3 years will form part of the landscape in which the election is held. I actually think the election is going to be much more about the future, about who has a plan for what the country looks like coming out of the pandemic, about who actually sees a vision for an economy and grabs the moment that I think this is of reimagining the country, and perhaps the single biggest moment that we've had since the end of the Second World War. I also think at the end of the day, it's going to be a question of, you know, which leader is best placed to bring to bear that person's experience with integrity and with honesty to bring the country back together again.
Does it worry you that not Anthony Albanese doesn't have strong name recognition and just recognition across the country?
Anthony Albanese is the most experienced person in Australian politics.
But he's not well known, is he?
Well, at the end of the day, he brings to bear an enormous amount of experience. I think he is uniquely placed to bring the country back together again in the aftermath of this government and in coming out of the pandemic. And we will certainly be making that case.
That's Richard Marles, the Deputy Opposition Leader and Shadow Employment Minister. This is RN Drive. Our number, 0418 226 576. I wonder what you make of the boycott. Has Australia made the right decision? I'd love to hear from you tonight. Returning to Australia's decision to follow the US and not send diplomats to next year's Winter Olympics in Beijing tonight, well, China's embassy in Canberra has urged Australia to create what it calls favourable conditions to improve the relationship between the countries, and says this announcement does the opposite. Independent member for Warringah and former Winter Olympian Zali Stegall says the decision could place extra stress on athletes.
This conversation's been going on for some time, and there had been calls for the athletes to boycott, and I strongly opposed that. I very much supported that there should be a consideration of a diplomatic boycott. There's no doubt the human rights records are incredibly concerning and needs action. I am, though, concerned about the pressure and impact this does also put on the Olympic team.
Tasmanian Liberal Senator Erica Betts has previously written to the Prime Minister calling for a boycott of the Games. He also chairs the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Legislation Committee. He is a former minister too. Welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Does today's announcement go far enough to address your concerns?
I welcome the announcement. It's a great move. I hope that our ambassador won't be attending the Games either, so it'll be a full diplomatic boycott. I think the circumstances in China are such that the dictatorship needs to have a very strong message sent to it by the freedom-loving countries of the world that we are observing what they're doing, and it's completely and utterly unacceptable.
What impact will the diplomatic boycott have when athletes are still participating?
First of all, the propaganda value for the dictatorship will be substantially diminished because a dictatorship such as China doesn't seek to host the Olympics because of their love of sport. It is for the economic and tourism benefits and the propaganda value where they can say to their local people, look at us, we are now the centre of world attention. The world has come to us because we are so good at showcasing an Olympic Games. And so if they are denied the vision of world leaders, sport ministers, etc., from attending, I think that will have some impact. But that said, you know, if you or I were a Uyghur in one of the concentration camps, or a House Christian, or a Falun Gong practitioner, or a Hong Konger Democrat, a prisoner of conscience, what would we want the freedom-loving countries of the world to do? And I think we would want them to stand in solidarity with us, and that is what I hope the diplomatic boycott will achieve.
Is it a strong enough message to call out China's human rights record?
It is one way of calling it out. My own view is the International Olympic Committee should never have chosen Beijing, given the record. But look, all these things ultimately add up. It is like the legislation we passed just before the end of the year, ensuring that leaders of countries that are either corrupt or huge human rights abusers can be denied entry into Australia or have assets that they might have in Australia captured by the government. So those sort of things, they all add up to put extra pressure on the dictatorship, and also must provide some comfort to those that are suffering as they are in China.
How do you respond to the Chinese embassy's criticism?
Look, this is a typical response by a belligerent dictatorship that has no concern for the public pulse, because they're a dictatorship. They don't necessarily, or they don't rely on the vote of the people every 3 years. Indeed, the president's declared himself president for life. And so look, their response is what one would expect. That said, if all the freedom-loving countries of the world stick together, and it's great the US, New Zealand and Lithuania have come on board with this call, if enough countries get on board, then the Chinese dictatorship will not be able to pick one or two countries off, as they did with Australia when we asked for a world review of where COVID originated.
Just want to shift before I let you go to George Christensen's appearance on a far-right-wing American conspiracy show. Mr. Christensen is not new to controversy. The Prime Minister says he should quietly go into retirement. Do you think that's going to happen, and should it happen?
Look, George Christensen has indicated he won't be recontesting his seat, so yes, he will be going into retirement, but his appearance on the program where certain comparisons were made with Auschwitz, and which he did not repudiate, is, I've got to say, very disappointing. Because to suggest, as I haven't heard the program or seen a transcript, but I'm relying on media reports, that the compere basically said that that which is happening in Australia with the vaccine is like Auschwitz. Well, that diminishes Auschwitz, one of the most ugly, if not the ugliest event in human history, and to try to have some equivalence between the two is completely unacceptable, hugely disappointing, and George, I trust, if he had his time again, would have said, hang on a moment, that is going way overboard. He didn't, and he should have.
But he also did something else in his own language, which is calling for people to go protest at Australian embassies. How is that appropriate?
Oh, look, if you want to send a message, I wasn't aware of the detail of that. Was he asking Australians to who are overseas?
Well, he didn't specify who should be, but, you know, go ahead and protest to Australian embassies.
Look, my view in general terms is that when you are overseas or talking overseas about your country, you always defend it and you keep your internal politics internally to Australia. And I think that's the best way of dealing with matters such as the vaccination regime that we have in this country. And look, just in case there's any question, I'm double jabbed. I support vaccination. I encourage people to do so. But I do have sympathy with those that hold a differing view. That vaccine, seeking to have protests overseas is not something I would encourage in any way, shape or form.
Mm. But we've got really high rates of vaccination in this country. It has a lot to do with the fact that we've actually had vaccine mandates, doesn't it?
Well, I happen to think that the vast bulk of Australians listen to the evidence and all the considerations and voluntarily went forward. The idea that people, especially the Australian ethos, if you mandate something, I think the Australian character is to rebel against it. And so I don't think the mandating actually did anything in that regard. What I think Australians did, they listened to the evidence, and it's relatively clear, I think, that mm-hmm. if you're vaccinated, you are less likely to get severe symptoms, which means less likely to end up in hospital, and even better, less likely to end up in the cemetery. And in those circumstances, it didn't take me much convincing to have the double jab.
No, Eric, that's same as me. I thought, that's good. I'd like to be possibly less sick. That's definitely the decision I made too. Thank you so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
Tasmanian Liberal Senator Erica Betts joining us there. This is RN Drive.